I'm privileged to welcome a friend of mine and someone who is an expert. So sit tight. You want to hear about this. Dr. Todd Hutton. Welcome, Todd. Good to see you.
Good to see you again, Drew.
Dr. Hutton is a board-certified psychiatrist, fellow of the American Psychiatric Association. He's an associate clinical professor of psychiatry at the USC Keck School of Medicine, where he teaches residents in psychiatry. We've known each other for years and years and years.
About 25.
Has it been 25 years? Yeah. That scares me. That frightens me. Dr. Hutton's Twitter handle is at Dr. Todd Hutton, H-U-T-T-O-N. And the website pertinent to some of the treatment we're going to be talking about here is SoCalTMS.com, S-O-C-A-L-T-M-S.com. Let's just get right into it. What is TMS?
Well, okay, so TMS stands for transcranial magnetic stimulation. So if I break that down, transcranial, meaning across your cranium, across your skull.
Magic.
Yeah.
It's a magnet that goes across your brain skull.
Magnetic.
Into your brain.
And stimulate. So we're stimulating the brain.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is, so as a psychiatrist, I do a lot of therapy. I do a lot of prescribing, a lot of pharmacology. We now have another tool, a way to stimulate the brain to treat depression and potentially a lot of other things. So the way I think about it, how do you know, wireless charging is all the rage.
Yes.
How does that happen?
Magnet.
Exactly.
Yeah, but people have not studied electric, the physics of electrons, is that magnets create currents. They move electrons forward, and your brain has a certain amount of electrochemical qualities to it, so the magnet causes currents in the brain.
Right.
Is that one way to look at it?
So magnetism and electricity are sort of two sides of the same coin. You can turn electricity into a magnetic pulse. Mm-hmm. And magnetism goes straight through things. So it goes straight through your skull unimpeded, unlike electricity. And then it gets converted back into electricity in the neurons in your brain because they're like wires.
Yeah, sort of.
And
ish.
And they can make you fire. So the same way that your cell phone can now wirelessly recharge, we can actually deliver energy across the skull.
And some of the issue in depression is a deficiency of firing or deficiency of concentration chemicals between the cells.
It's been known for a long time that there was typically areas of the brain that were underactive in patients with depression. And a really smart psychiatrist named Mark George back in the 80s and 90s was looking at this saying, well, if we could just literally stimulate these underactive mood areas in the brain and make them fire, could we – make them sort of come back alive. And so that's exactly what we do. We deliver
pulses,
thousands of pulses in a treatment. And it's literally like exercising that part of the brain. When you exercise a muscle, the muscle gets bigger. They've been able to demonstrate that those parts of the brain get bigger. Brain growth factors are released.
Wow.
New connections are sprouted. Literally, they can measure growth on an MRI. And an increase in metabolic activity now in this area that restores it to a normal.
Is there more – once you get a clinical response, is there a higher probability of a sustained response than, say, a pharmacological agent because of this growth? And I know there's some observations of growth from pharmacology too.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a really good question. The kind of – we need to do more long-term studies about what happens because one of the problems in the field right now is we have only done these short-term studies and we can get people better. And yet depression is a recurrent and chronic illness in many, many people, and it comes back many times. And so we're now looking at ways to maintain people. So one of the things we do after we do an acute course of treatment, which is basically 5 days a week for like 6 weeks.
Mm. How long?
Half hour usually.
Tanning session.
And you're awake, you're alert, you feel this kind of woodpecker on your head.
Mm.
So but going back, so when we get people well – we're now looking at doing maintenance treatment where you come in once or twice a month and just to maintain that improvement that you've got going. But so, yeah, how long the improvement maintains is an issue because we don't have the studies enough yet showing how to maintain it.
Are there side effects?
Very, very few and much, much less than medicine.
Okay. And that's going to be my question. It's still a little bit of a confusion to me is that – people don't like taking medicine. What I've read about TMS is it looks very effective and very appealing. Why is it not more of a first-line treatment, or is it now becoming that?
Well, it really could be a first-line treatment.
I know, and people kind of would want it to because people don't like taking medicine.
Because it's actually has fewer side effects than medicine.
Yeah, I get
it's actually
it.
Safer than medicine. There's
Is it the insurance companies don't pay for it yet?
Yes,
or what,
it's more expensive. It's
so
more
that's
time
the issue.
Yes, it's money.
So ridiculous.
It's money.
But yet they could probably save money in the long run. Well, you know, the insurance company.
They will save money in the long run. Yeah. And we're trying to educate them about that. But it takes, 5 seconds to take a pill, and it's a lot cheaper. But whereas coming in for TMS, a course of TMS treatment is going to be like six – we do 30, 40 treatments over a course of 6 to 8 weeks. And so, it adds up and it's a time commitment. But we're using it, say, as a first-line treatment, say, in pregnant women who don't want to take medication.
Oh, that makes sense. Perfect.
Right?
Yeah.
Nursing.
Yeah. Have you used it in the setting of recovery and addiction?
Yes.
How's it work?
Very well.
I bet.
And it helps reduce cravings and had success using it in chronic pain patients.
Are you focusing on different areas with these different syndromes?
Sometimes, yes.
Yeah.
Sometimes with pain, we focus on motor strip instead of mood areas. You would think sensory strip.
Well, I would actually think insular cortex because I know that's the one that's firing strangely with certain kinds of pain syndromes.
That too. It's hard to reach the insular cortex because it's kind of buried.
Yeah.
So we reach an area that's connected to it, upstream from it.
Anterior cingulate?
Dorsolateral prefrontal cortex.
Oh, perfect. Okay. Yeah.
And
then
so
that stimulates the
We stimulate cingulate. This. There's this really easy spot to find in the left frontal lobe, and everything downstream is also stimulated. So we're stimulating a network. We're not just stimulating a place. We're stimulating a whole mood network and all the downstream areas. So we can stimulate the insular cortex indirectly by
who do you want
one neuron wave.
Who do you I'm an enthusiast about this. I've wanted to do this podcast with you for a while because I know you've been doing this for a while. We've talked about it over the years and I've still sort of been always a little bit confused that it is not more mainstream. It's weird to me that it's not.
It's weird to me too.
Yeah.
It's weird to me too because it's a great new tool.
It's fantastic. And
I think it has more antidepressant potency than medication. It's a step below ECT.
Right, which is electric shock therapy.
Electric shock therapy.
Also moving electrons, but moving at a large scale.
Yeah, because you're using directly electricity on the skull. And to do that, you have to be under anesthesia. And
it's not focused. It's not anatomically. It's just generalized.
It stimulates the whole brain. Yeah. We trigger a seizure.
Yeah.
People get confused. It is still the granddaddy of depression treatments. But it's also kind of the Hail Mary of depression. You don't do it until you're super desperate.
Your life's in danger and nothing's working.
And so there's a big gulf. So antidepressants help millions of people.
Yeah.
I don't want to completely trash medicine. They help millions of people. I still prescribe a lot of medication. Antidepressants don't help millions of people though too.
Mm-hmm.
Typically we say like 30% of patients do great on medicine. Another 40% do kind of sort of better than nothing. And another 30% are kind of like, eh.
Yeah.
And
how about
side effects. And that's millions of people.
Is that the same thing with this or is it better? TMS.
We're getting 50% basically.
I was going to say, you've got to get at least half.
Remission rates.
That's my sense of it.
Another 25% we call response, which is like you're not completely cured, but you're definitely a lot better. And another 25% that we're not getting better. Probably because depression is probably more than one thing.
Sure.
It's probably not just.
Are you giving psychotherapy to some of these people at the same time, or do you sub-select that group, or does everybody gets that? Or
well, there's a big school of thought in the field, like doing therapy during the treatment. Or what is what you do during the treatment activating certain parts of the brain, which therefore the treatment has more effect on those.
Yeah.
And so some people are doing therapy during the treatments.
I would think particularly if you're going after the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex, that's CBT.
Right.
That's what activates that region.
So that's an exciting thing.
Is CBT the kind of psychotherapy you're doing or it depends on the patient?
Depends on the patient.
Yeah. Yeah.
Depends on the patient. It's right now logistically it's sometimes hard to do it. There's been PTSD studies where they do like a desensitization and then they'd go do a TMS treatment.
Oh, interesting. How about OCD, any of those or anxiety disorders?
PTSD is in the anxiety disorders family and we're having some good success reducing anxiety symptoms. Right now we're treating a lot of depression but there's a huge overlap with anxiety and we see those anxiety symptoms get better. OCD lives in a deeper part of the brain and there's some research being done on a magnet that will – reach that.
Yeah.
It's not clinically available in the U.S. right now. It's being looked at in stroke recovery.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Because we're getting the brain to grow and fire.
Sure.
So if you have a stroke, are you going to recover better from that stroke if we give you TMS treatments in your recovery period?
It would logically seems to follow.
Yeah.
So who do you want to contact? Who should be coming in? I mean, because it seems like it's a pretty broad range of patients. Let me see if I can give a shot at it. Somebody is unwilling to take medication but has a significant depression.
Yes.
They should see you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Somebody who's been on antidepressants but not suboptimal response.
Yes, absolutely.
Or, yeah.
There are a lot of people who come in and say, you know, it helps me maybe 25%, so I keep taking it, but this is not a good life.
Side effect profile they don't like. To me, that'd be reasonable.
That's a killer too.
Yeah. I mean, just all the sexual dysfunction, all that kind of stuff, and the weight gain. And you don't have to worry about any of that with this, do you?
No. No weight gain. No sexual side effects. Yeah. A seizure happens maybe 1 in 30,000 treatments.
Okay.
Really rare.
During the treatment?
Only during the treatment.
So who cares?
Only in the treatment when you're in the office.
You're prepared for that.
Yeah. It's not a big deal.
Yeah. Might even enhance the effect. I hate to say it. That's a doctor joke.
So if this is FDA approved.
Yeah.
It's covered by most commercial insurance.
Oh, it is?
Oh, yeah.
Ah.
Anthem, Blues.
But then they have certain criteria you have to meet to get the
approval. Yes. And a common criteria is you've had to have psychotherapy and you've had to try at least 4 antidepressants. Some are 3, some are 6. Jesus. Tried and failed.
Yeah.
But literally still, that's millions of people.
Yeah.
It could be a first-line treatment. It doesn't have to be a second-line treatment, although it's only ever been studied as a second-line treatment just because of the time factor and the cost compared to medication. So insurance companies are driving a lot of the rules about who gets
it. As always. If somebody wanted to pay cash for it, what would it cost?
Of course, a treatment would be about $10,000.
Oh, expensive. Okay.
Yeah.
Sure would be – if you had the money, it sure be tempting though. I'll tell you what.
Yeah, it gives people their life back.
And
you know,
side effects and not taking a medicine all the time. Yeah. And you know, it's one thing to take a blood pressure medicine I do every day, and that's bad enough. But to have to get them a psychoactive, I can imagine that would be something you want to get away from.
We have people come in and then go to work.
Yeah.
You know, they go about their day. They don't have to do anything different with their day. They might get a headache a little bit. They might be a little bit tired after a treatment. But it's really nice to give something a treatment that people really like, that tolerate, that works for a large percentage of them when a lot of other things have failed.
What excites you for the future in this treatment?
Oh, I mean, we're in the Model T era of this treatment. I mean, we're still just – there's so many things to figure out. Like where is the optimal place to put the magnet? I mean, it was picked because on the scans of – depressed patients, this was the underactive spot.
And what is it generally you're going for?
Dorsal lateral prefrontal cortex. It's kind of like the left, upper left side of your temple.
That's generally where this treatment is applied.
Yes, yeah. Generally.
Do you ever go to the ventral medial or can you get there?
God, the Canadians are doing that.
Because I've always felt like
Canadians are doing that and putting the magnet there and getting good results.
So
there's one thing. So we don't know the best spot to put the magnet. We don't know the best pulse sequence. We don't know like how many times a week should we do this. There's some suggestion that actually doing interval workouts, like instead of doing 3,000 pulses in a sitting, doing 1,000, 1,000, 1,000 separated a little bit might be a little bit better. There's just so much to figure out. And then there's so many other things this might go for. OCD.
Anxiety disorder.
Anxiety
disorder. PTSD. I'm sure there's
stroke.
A lot of – oh, yeah, stroke.
Migraine headaches. We're looking at – there's some protocols for that, for helping that. And I've been really excited about the chronic pain patients we've treated. Had a really good – you know. But right now, depression is what's covered by insurance. And
tell me about the chronic pain. What's your sort of – what do you think you're doing there? So you hit the motor strip.
Well – okay, so you know, chronic pain has very little to do with what's actually going on in the body.
Correct.
Right.
It's your brain.
It's in your nervous system.
Yeah. Okay? Your autonomic and your central nervous system.
You know, and a lot of the efforts have been treating it sort of from the bottom up, and we're trying to treat it from the top down. In the perception of pain, and the pain patient says, "Yeah, I have pain, but it doesn't stop me anymore. I can now go out and do stuff. I'm not." Drugged down by it.
Well, and that's why I was thinking about the insular cortex and adjusting that whenever we talk about chronic pain, because that's the misery part of the pain. It's
that's
the emotional charge of pain.
Right. And you're going indirectly
into the insular
cortex. Pain is a psychological experience.
An emotional experience, yeah. And is that my phone? That's my phone. Sorry about
that's
that.
That's not mine.
Oh my gosh, everyone's coming after me all at once here. So the insular cortex, what you go after with chronic – well, part of what you go after
with one of these mood areas, right?
Yeah. And do you ever – I always feel like there's a big sort of bodily-based component to pain, obviously, and trauma. Do you ever do things like any way of getting at the vagus, to sort of vagal nerve sorts of – or any of the autonomic functions? Anybody looking at that?
Well,
I know it's very deep and very different systems.
Well, vagal nerve stimulation has been a depression treatment.
But can you get that with a magnet?
Well, actually – you know, when you stimulate the vagus nerve, you're stimulating it like a foot away from the brain.
Yeah.
We're stimulating the brain directly. I mean, we're
Can you get the nuclei for the vagus, all that stuff?
Not right now. Okay. Not with the kind of magnets. Our magnets only go cortical deep. All the magnets that are currently available just going cortical deep. But the brain isn't like a map of the states where this lives here and that lives here. It's like a map of the freeways. This is the 405.
It's interactive. And
all these parts are connected. And so if you can access the network somewhere near the surface, you end up stimulating the deeper spots as well because you stimulate everything downstream. When you're firing more from this cortical spot, we see spots on the other side of the brain, spots deeper in the brain lighting up in response to that.
Speaking of chronic pain, I always think of the close relationship with trauma. Is there a trauma treatment here too? Childhood trauma, chronic trauma, that kind of thing?
Maybe. We're still in the Model T days.
We're still
just like focusing on depression right now.
Yeah.
It's a lot of excitement about what might come and what might work out. I don't know that everything's going to work out. People are researching Alzheimer's and things like that. I don't know that.
That's a little too global.
I don't know that we're going to change the underlying disease process there. But these other types of things where we have these dysfunctions that we know are reversible with medications and therapy may also be reversible.
I've always been very excited about this. And I'm so delighted you're doing it. I wanted to alert people to what this is, transcranial magnetic stimulation. Go to socaltms.com where you can follow Dr. Hutton at Dr. Todd Hutton, H-U-T-T-O-N. Is there a phone number if somebody's really motivated and wants to look into this further?
Absolutely. 866-322-7776.
And although I know you and I trust you and I certainly refer people to you, these centers are around the country as well. Do you have a network or do you recommend a certain way of getting at it if you can't travel around this area in Southern California?
Yes. Neurostar.com will get you to
Northstar.com?
Neurostar.com. We'll get you to Neurostar providers. That's the type of machine that I like to use and is the most commonly used one in the country. We at SoCal TMS, we have 6, now going on 8 locations around SoCal, California.
Congratulations. Listen, Dr. Hutton, I appreciate you being here. I think we got it.
My pleasure.
I think people – because, again, I think there's a lot of people don't like to take medication, and I'm always looking for alternative ways to do this.
People only get partly better or not better, or they give up on it. We've seen a lot of people who just like, I gave up on going to my psychiatrist because
– That's a shame. Sometimes just because they're not aware of these alternative kinds of interventions that – I like this one because whenever there's something that does work and does no harm, I'm all in.
That's the thing I love. It's so benign. I don't feel bad about treating anybody because I know I'm not going to hurt anybody.
And there you go. And Dr. Hutton, thank you so much. And everybody else, we'll see you next time.
All right, Drew.
For call-in times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's D-R-D-R-E-W Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the swinging sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com. All conversation and information exchanged during the participation in the Dr. Drew Podcast is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction. Nothing on these podcasts supplement or supersede the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the podcast or drdrew.com.